KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
I've always been conflicted about shooting a film about free soloing just because it's so dangerous. It's hard to not imagine your friend falling through the frame to his death.
The new film, Free Solo, follows professional rock climber Alex Honnold's ascent of Yosemite's towering El Capitan without any ropes. When he was shooting the climb, co-director Jimmy Chin feared adding cameras to an already precarious situation could have lethal consequences. This week, while I'm out of town, we're sharing an episode of the KCRW podcast, The Document, in which our colleague, Matt Holzman, talks to married filmmaking couple Jimmy Chin and Chai Vasharelli about how and why they made their dizzying film, Free Solo. But first, we banter. Stay tuned, it's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my partner in banter, Matt Bellany. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So hi there from Lisbon. I have just been at a large tech conference, but thanks to the magic of technology, I can banter from afar. I have to say this conference was absolutely mammoth, and there were literally tens of thousands of people at this thing, and I'm not a tech person, so it was all very strange and new to me. But back to the business at hand. Hollywood, as you know, as we have discussed, there's very little more precious in Hollywood at this time than a franchise. And studios, therefore, studios, TV networks, are incentivized to milk these franchises when they are fortunate enough to find them until they are, you know, shriveled shadows of themselves. Walking Dead is one recent example. It has already been somewhat shriveling. Key actor Andrew Lincoln, who plays Rick Grimes, so I guess has slayed many of the Walking Dead. I am not a Walking Dead person, but yeah, I assume you can confirm this for me, Matt. He's kind of wants out. He wants to leave the show. He's a Brit. He doesn't want to be sweltering in Georgia, running about in the woods with the zombies any longer. So what is AMC to do with this precious but fading asset? Three movies which will air or be or play somewhere we don't know yet.
Yeah, and what this really is this is an admission by AMC, and they're not alone, that they cannot let this franchise die. Even though its ratings are not what they once were, it is still a top five drama, and more importantly, it delivers an invaluable audience to AMC that they can't let it go away. And, you know, movies have typically been criticized for overplaying the franchises, milking these things to death. But what we're seeing now is this is happening in television, too. Walking Dead is not alone. The Breaking Bad creators just announced they're doing a movie spinoff of Breaking Bad, and they already have Better Call Saul. You see over at HBO, Game of Thrones is getting a prequel series, one of five that is in development. This first one that they're doing actually has some cast members, including Naomi Watts. But you're going to see more of this because as television audiences fracture and decrease on traditional channels, they need to have these pre-branded things that will lure an audience. And what is more pre-branded than a spinoff of an existing hit? So you're going to see more of these hits replicate themselves.
I mean, I don't know. I could see a Walking Dead movie, but three? I mean, we have seen many old TV shows rebooted, but this is a different thing. I mean, these are things where the so-called corpse of the show is not even cold. I mean, Walking Dead is still a thing. It's not even dead. Yet, they are running out before the memories have faded and it's a nostalgia thing. I mean, I guess nostalgia has become compressed in this world where we're nostalgic 5 minutes after something's on the air or in the movie theaters or even, you know, while it's still playing as a show. I don't know. I mean, do we think this is a good idea? Has it been tested? I'm not sure. If anybody's done that in a way that was effective.
Well, at AMC, they've got Better Call Saul, which a lot of people thought would be a disaster. Breaking Bad is one of the greatest television shows of all time, and its corpse was barely cold when Better Call Saul launched. And that show does well for AMC and has picked up some Emmys. So, you know, I think it's all in the execution, like everything. But I just think also the level of skepticism has to be high when you're thinking about these things, because you know they are not doing this for the creative reasons. They're doing it to milk the franchise.
Although, to play the other side, you know, Vince Gilligan, he is Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, and I would bank on him being able to do this without a second thought. Game of Thrones, on the other hand, not the same creators. I don't know, were audiences ready to let go of Game of Thrones, or was it played out? Can somebody else who's not, you know, the guys who originally figured out how to make this thing work, make this thing work? Time will tell. I think it's a worthwhile gamble given the incredible popularity, certainly, of Game of Thrones.
Well, and you can't not do it. That's the point here. If you are Richard Plepler running HBO or Casey Bloys doing programming, you get fired if you don't have a gigantic hit. And Game of Thrones is the biggest hit on television, so why not just do a spinoff? You can have something that is going to have immense pre-branded interest. And if you don't do it, it's almost fiscally irresponsible.
Meanwhile, speaking of, you know, Game of Thrones, HBO, there's a fight going on as we speak right now. I mean, these fights do arise and get settled routinely, but now it's getting to be a bit. HBO has been off the Dish Network since November 1st. This is what you call a carriage dispute, meaning that, you know, the Dish Network doesn't want to pay the bucks that HBO would demand for airing its very popular premium content, allowing Dish to carry it. These things have happened with broadcast networks. These have been big fights, and sometimes they do pull content off the air and they get resolved. However, this is the first time this has happened with HBO, and it is seems notable that it happened in the wake of AT&T's acquisition of Time Warner, which includes HBO among, you know, many. It's the crown jewel of the assets that AT&T acquired. And there, you know, there would be an argument to be made that with all of this power, by acquiring Time Warner, AT&T would promptly throw its weight around, and they certainly deny that they were going to do that. And however, they do claim this was Dish's decision, playing hardball, to drop the programming from HBO. But I will note, nonetheless, somehow HBO is not on the Dish Network.
Yeah, and there's speculation as to who instigated that, but, you know, I think this is the sign of a lot of things that are to come now that HBO is owned by a distributor.
A distributor that owns its own satellite network, DirecTV, and, you know, if you can't get it on Dish, you might very well say, well, I guess I'll just switch. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, editorial director of The Hollywood Reporter. This week, we're sharing an episode of The Document, the KCRW podcast created and hosted by Matt Holzman, who also happens to have created The Business. Now he crafts radio stories about the making of documentaries. This episode of The Document is all about the new film, Free Solo. We'll let Matt take it from there.
What you're hearing is the sound of Alex Honnold climbing El Capitan. That's the 3,200 feet of granite that towers over Yosemite Valley. Alex calls it the most impressive wall on Earth. And he would know because he's the first and only person to ever free solo El Cap, which means that he climbed it alone, without ropes or any other kind of safety gear. I know it sounds a little over the top, but it was quite literally perfection or death. And this is the voice of mountaineer and photographer Jimmy Chin, who was there filming it all.
I've always been conflicted about shooting a film about free soloing just because it's so dangerous. It's hard to not imagine your friend falling through the frame to his death.
People in the documentary world are always going on about whether the presence of the camera changes what it captures. They usually don't talk about whether their cameras will kill their subjects, but that's exactly what Chai Vassarelli and Jimmy Chin had to worry about while they were filming Alex Honnold climbing El Capitan for their new movie, Free Solo. And they started worrying about it the moment Alex uttered the words El Capitan and Free Solo in the same sentence.
I immediately asked Chai 3 or 4 times, he said what? Said, oh, he said he wants to free solo El Cap. And I said, he said what? You know, I mean, it took me a bit of time to really kind of wrap my head around it. At which point I took a step back and said, you know, I don't know if we should make this film, you know, because your mind goes to immediately the worst case scenario.
Chai, do you remember those early conversations?
No, it was very intense. It really was a moment for us to pause and to stop and say, like, is there something we even want to be involved in?
Alex Honnold is a good-looking, wiry 33-year-old with big brown eyes. He looks pretty unremarkable, but he really isn't like the rest of us.
There's been a lot of speculation about, like, how I deal with fear and, like, how I'm able to free soul. People are just like, oh, well, he must be a thrill seeker. There must be something defective.
The thing is that free solo climbing is an insanely dangerous sport. The list of famous free solo climbers reads a little like the obituary page.
So Alex has a lot of different nicknames, you know, Spock, No Big Deal Honnold, Han Solo.
And Spock, because?
Because he's kind of this very rational, non-emotive person.
Alex may just have been born like that. He certainly was, as Chai puts it, a
really geeky, awkward, scared kid.
And that didn't seem to change much as he got older.
There was definitely a time when I started climbing outside more and I was starting to road trip and go to campgrounds, but I was too afraid to talk to strangers. So I was doing a lot of soloing, or just a lot of climbing by myself, just because I didn't know anybody and I didn't want to talk to anybody.
So to dissect that a little, it was safer to climb rocks by himself than talk to another human being. And even to this day, you can sense a certain distance between Alex and other people.
My friends who are like, oh, that'd be terrible. But if I kill myself in an accident, they'll be like, oh, that was too bad. But like life goes on, you know, like they'll be fine. I mean, and I've had this problem with girls a lot. You know, they're like, oh, I really care about you. And I'm like, no, you don't. Like if I perish, like it doesn't matter. Like you'll find somebody else. Like that's not that big a deal.
Given that attitude, you won't be surprised to hear that Alex Honnold mostly lives alone in a van. It's a tricked out van, but still, it's a van.
Yeah, I mean, I love being in a van. Probably feel extra comfortable in the van now because I've lived in it for 9 years.
Alex drove his van to Yosemite to get ready for the most treacherous free climb in history. It would require nerves of steel and an almost inhuman amount of strength and skill and preparation. Each move, each tiny handhold and foothold had to be thought through and practiced and practiced. And that's what Alex did for months before he climbed El Cap.
Pitch one is stay left towards the top, splitter, feels more secure. Pitch two, trust the right foot, rock on, trust the feet, right hand to the last underclin. 8, easy romp, go fast. Stay outside with the down climb, careful of block. 26, so lie back corner, key left hand, right foot back step, edge, left foot against the wall, stand a huge ear jug thing, feet, match the big jug, crack. Then you see right hand down pulling on the top part of the jug.
You can see why shoving a camera in Alex's face while he was hanging by his fingernails 2,000 feet in the air seemed like a questionable idea. But if he was going to make this climb and someone was going to film it, there probably wasn't anyone better to do it than Chai Vassarelli and Jimmy Chin. Chai's an experienced documentary filmmaker, and Jimmy is a bit of a mountaineering god. He and the guys who'd be up there with him, he calls them his high-angle crew, had filmed thousands of hours hanging off of mountains. And most of them had known Alex for years. And ultimately, that's why Jimmy and Chai decided to do the film.
Someone was going to film it, and who would Alex most trust to be there alongside him? You know, that's where we landed.
And they trusted Alex to show good judgment about whether he should make the climb or not.
We all wanted to support Alex as his friend to do it, you know. But we also wanted to be very careful about, you know, shielding him from any external pressure of the film, if that makes sense, that he needed to do it for the film. So part of the conversations I had with the crew were that we would never ask Alex when he was going to do it. It should never be directed from our side. And so that was a challenge because we never knew when he might go for it.
And also, this was a secret. I remember, like, so the entire time we're making this movie, it's a secret. Because if it got out, it would just be extra pressure on Alex.
Our code word for him was Bambi, because he has these big brown eyes, and we'd say, okay, Bambi's on the move.
Watching the crew prepare for the shoot, thousands of feet in the air, is a spine-tingling sight. At times, they're hanging there with their cameras by a single rope.
are in speed.
Because, Mikey, I think I'll probably... If you're going to shoot that lower face, I'll probably shoot here. You know, when you have five people on a wall, that's a huge amount of exposure to the risks.
Yeah, mistakes.
Yes. They're very simple mistakes that could be have catastrophic outcomes.
And shooting in the mountains was even more complicated than normal because of their ongoing negotiations with Alex about where it was okay for them to be and where it wasn't okay for them to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then just a camera above, sitting above the boulder pitch, essentially.
Yeah.
It's distracting.
Yeah, it's distracting.
Well, it's not just distracting, but it's also like, you know, nobody wants to see that.
They talked and planned and practiced while Alex climbed and reclimbed El Cap with rope and harness, literally memorizing every nook and cranny of his climb.
Why are we up here again?
We're up here because practice makes perfect, and I am far from perfect, so I need more practice.
But for Alex, I'm guessing that dangling from a giant slab of rock was better than what was waiting for him back on the ground.
You know, here's a guy who's not so comfortable with intimacy. And so every night when he comes home, he's got to have an intimate conversation with three strangers who are sitting in his van and talk about, like, his deepest memories and, like,
feelings.
The most painful memories and his feelings.
Part of the thing with the L word, you know, saying love and stuff, is that, like, in my entire life, no one in any part of my family has ever used, you know, that word.
And that was one of the things that always kind of worried me about, you know, do you really want to get inside this guy's head at this moment in his life?
My mom's favorite sayings are, good enough isn't. No matter how well I ever do at anything, it's not that good.
I don't know. I always was wondering, like, do you really go to therapy in the middle of, like, the hardest thing you've ever done in your life? Are you really going to talk about how you feel?
Questions like those had to be put aside now. In fact, it was too late for any doubt about what Chai and Jimmy were doing, because Alex Honnold was about to free solo El Capitan.
That climb is coming up after a short break. You're listening to KCRW's podcast, The Document, this week on The Business from KCRW.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. This week, I'm out of town, but listen to an episode of the KCRW podcast, The Document, hosted by Matt Holzman.
Today's episode is Free Solo, which is also the name of the sweat-inducing documentary about Alex Honnold's climb of Yosemite's El Capitan without a rope or any kind of safety gear. Filmmakers Chai Vassarelli and Jimmy Chin almost didn't make the movie because they were terrified that they'd witness their friend falling to his death and that somehow it would be their fault. And now they were about to find out if they had made a wise decision. In the wee hours of Wednesday, November 15th, 2016, Alex Honnold walked through a lush meadow to the base of El Capitan, something he'd done maybe 100 times. Only this time, the only safety gear he had with him was the little chalk bag that hung from his waist.
Hey, Jimmy, do you copy?
This is Jimmy.
Just started climbing.
He started out fine, but after like 600 feet, something happened.
This sucks. I don't want to be here. Hey, whoever's on the radio, this is Alex. I think I'm bailing.
Wait, could you repeat?
I think he's bailing from heart.
Bailing from heart, that's correct.
The first time I watched the film, I thought that must have been disconcerting for you because it was like, oh, my God, he's not this Iceman. He has feelings. That feels unsafe.
I don't know if I can try with everybody watching. It's too scary.
And then the second time I watched it, I thought exactly the opposite, which is you must have thought if he feels comfortable enough not to do the thing, even though this camera crew is relying on him to do this, or we're not going to have a movie, then you know he's going to make a good decision and it's not going to be forced by your presence?
Well, I think it was both, right? It was both feelings at the same time. But talk about cameras interfering. I mean, like, that was like, you know, those types of moments are the worst moments to film, but you know you absolutely have to have them for the movie, but you know you're just making them feel terrible by filming them.
Yeah, I mean, I was so happy that I did not have to be there. I was so happy. I was up on the wall because nobody wanted to film that moment.
So there was 6 months or so between the first attempt and the time that you, so that was November, and then you came back in June. What happened in the interim? Was there any sense that he might not come back and do it?
Well, he bought a house and we would visit him in Las Vegas and check in. So we always wondered, like, what, it seems so far away. Like, is he going to go back?
Well, I mean, we knew he was going to go back.
We knew he was going to go back.
At least practice. And knowing him for 10 years, I just thought it would be very hard for him to go back to Yosemite and look at El Cap every single day and not be tempted.
And what he ended up doing was kind of transforming or bringing up to another level his own body and fitness. I remember checking in with him and being like, how are you feeling about El Cap? And he's like, I'm going to be fit as f-.
Back in Yosemite, Alex started psyching up again for his climb. And on the afternoon of June 5th, 2017, he was hanging out and making dinner in his van with Jimmy.
And Alex is like, well, I'm seriously thinking about going scrambling tomorrow, is what he calls it, scrambling. And so we said, oh, okay. And he's like, but it's 5 o'clock. Can you guys be ready for that tomorrow? And I was like, yeah, sure, of course, no problem. And we actually hung out for another 45 minutes just being casual, just to make it feel like there wasn't any pressure. And he said, don't you need to go? So then we walked out, I made the call, and everybody, you know, moves into action and, you know, rigged all night. And everybody was in position when he was ready to leave in the morning.
So when you say rigged all night, that means that you climbed to the top of El Capitan and rappelled down so that people were hanging there, and you did that in the middle of the night.
We had people going up from the bottom, and we also had people coming down from the top. And, you know, I mean, there was several thousand feet of rope that we were putting in and making sure that they weren't in his way and everybody was in the right position and everybody's, you know, was clear on their shot lists. And the big conversation also was that, remember that you're climbers first, then you're filming, stay focused on your job, don't get distracted.
With five cameramen hanging from the mountain, an extremely long lens shooting from the ground and a helicopter filming high above, Alex began his climb.
Let's hope it's a low-gravity day.
Hi, Huck. See you at the ground.
See you on the ground.
See you, buddy.
One of the big issues in the negotiations about what would work for Alex for this shoot was how they'd cover a really tricky point in the climb known as the boulder problem.
It's a very intricate sequence. You've got your right hand on a crimp, left hand on a side pull, and then you put your right foot onto the...
This long list of minute, incredibly technical moves ends in a crazy mid-air spread eagle karate kick thing.
And a karate kick feels like you're falling into the other wall, which feels outrageous for so long.
Alex and the crew were afraid that having a person there at that point was just going to be way too distracting. And frankly, none of the cameramen wanted to be there anyway.
But we felt like it was such a critical point in the film and such a critical point in the climb that it had to get covered. And so we thought, okay, well, let's put remote cameras there. And even initially, he wasn't necessarily comfortable about that, and we didn't want to push it at all. You know, for a while I was thinking, well, we just won't have that coverage. And then one day he said, oh yeah, you guys should have remote cameras there, it's fine. And we were like, okay, well, he must be feeling pretty confident.
But, you know, he says this thing in the film, which I think is really honest, which is he doesn't mind falling to his death, but he does with his best friends watching. No one needs that memory.
Just did the karate kick. He's got it.
Oh my god. Fuck yeah.
He did it.
That is way too gnarly.
He must be so stoked.
The boulder problem is part of what's called the crux, the hardest part of the climb, which doesn't mean the rest of it was easy. But after Alex got through the crux, he really began to power to the top.
Alex is having the best day of his life.
The average time it takes a recreational climber with equipment to summit El Cap is 4 days. Alex Honnold approached the summit in just under 4 hours. And Jimmy was there to give him a huge hug.
Oh, God, it's done.
I was just overwhelmed. And yeah, it was very emotional for me.
Like a gigantic weight off of my shoulders, too, I have to admit. I mean,
so delighted.
So, obviously, the cameras didn't kill Alex Honnold on El Capitan. And in a way, it was kind of the opposite.
You're absolutely right. You know, we'd spent so much time thinking about, you know, the negative impact of the filming process. We never really imagined that the filming would actually be a catalyst for him to be better prepared. And that was a very pleasant surprise.
But it seems like it was even more than that. It seems like maybe the camaraderie and the practice and the moral support and the sense that he wasn't alone while he was up there, that helped give him, well, I don't know what it gave him, but it gave him something that really made a difference. My proof is a tiny little moment that happens just after he gets through the crux. He sees a cameraman hanging there, and he looks up at him with a big grin, and he says,
"Yeah, buddy."
He says, "Yeah, buddy," and then he goes on with his climb.
I think it's probably the first time that Alex could celebrate a solo with other people.
Right.
You know, because he always would solo by himself. He wouldn't tell anybody. And in this, like the greatest solo of his life, he had a team of people he really trusted and who had worked with him for 2 years next to him. So I think he always talks about that top out when he sees all the guys. It's like it was amazing to be able to celebrate with your friends, which was a new experience for him.
The night after the climb, the producer of Free Solo showed up to cook dinner for everyone.
Is pasta?
Yes.
Which was like the best meal we've ever had. I think everyone was starving, awesome. And it was such a good meal.
And did you really whip all this up?
Yeah, dude.
Dude, you're a chef.
And everyone just hung out. And Alex had that grin on his face for like the next, I don't know, 2 weeks.
What is recovery food for Free Soloing El Capitan? Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
You know, it was a very collective sigh of relief, but also just this great moment because it ended up really feeling like a big team effort. And, you know, just to be a part of, you know, what Alex was able to achieve and then to be able to film it. I mean, it really was, you know, one of the greatest filming experiences I think we've had and most terrifying at the same time.
And that's The Business, which comes to you this week, courtesy of The Document. Matt Holzman produced this episode of The Document with Sarah Pellegrini, Mike Schlitt, and Ray Guarna. You can subscribe to The Business and The Document and other KCRW podcasts at kcrw.com/podcasts. The Document's next episode comes out on November 14th. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.